there's this battle between science and religion. And in wrestling with that sermon on science and belief systems, it has really, again, it has grabbed me, and I'm wondering even if bringing it up today might not lead to some argument or something. And I'd like to read from the person that I got the information from, Thomas Mitzinger, some of his words to kind of put us in place for this particular sermon. There is a new image of persons emerging out of genetics and neuroscience, one which will basically contradict all other images of humankind that we've had in the Western tradition. It is strictly unmetaphysical. It is absolutely incompatible with the Christian image of man, and it may force us to confront our mortality in a much more direct way than we've ever done before in history. It may close the door on certain hopes people have had, not only scientists and philosophers, but all of us, such as maybe somehow consciousness could exist without the brain after death. So there's a reductive anthropology that may come to us, and it may come faster than we are prepared for it. It may come as an emotional, sobering experience to many people, particularly in developing countries who make up 80% of human beings, who still have a metaphysical image of humankind. They have never even heard of the neuroscience, and they don't want to hear anything about neurocorrelates or consciousness, and they want to keep on living in their metaphysical worldview as they have for centuries. Don't we have enough trouble with religion? We have religions battling one another. We have modern day, at least vocabulary-wise, crusades going on. And we have fear in our country that is propagated by a particular viewpoint that we are going to be overrun by another religion, being a Christian religious nation. And here comes a scientific view that says, the way the brain works, we've created these religions, just like the evolutionary process creates an adaptation in any animal, and the butterfly that changes colors, and the lizards that change colors for survive, the human mind that created belief systems was simply an adaptation to give an advantage in the evolutionary process. And belief systems aren't anything at all concerned with truth or reality. It's simply just a tool to navigate in this world. New territory. What do we as Unitarian Universalists do with that? As a liberal religious group that says we believe in science, that takes away concepts of soul, takes away concepts of God, and says we as human beings have created all of that. So the title of this sermon is What Can Emerson, Thoreau, and Margaret Fuller Be Our Spiritual Guides in the 21st Century? And the first thing that came to my mind, we do not need guides of any sort if we're not going to travel on new territory. If we're just going to stay where we are and have the beliefs that we have and move throughout life without any changes at all, we don't need guides. So that's really the first question. Are we willing to go on to new territory, new turf, new belief systems, understanding, wrestling with this scientific discovery, if you will, or this scientific view, at least wrestling with it, not necessarily accepting it as truth, but at least wrestling with it? Are we willing to go on that journey? I guess that is the first question. And if we do, can they guide us? I think something else, if this is true, we find ourselves in a major place in history where there's a major disruption as we human beings understand ourselves. Because if we don't have an absolute belief system, how are we to relate to one another? I mean, again, we're still here in this room. We still relate to one another. Things that we say to each other can hurt us, can can make us feel good, or if somebody doesn't say anything to me, I might even start thinking, what did I do wrong? But we still affect one another. We're still here. We still live. We still breathe. We still eat. We still have fun. We still have sorrow. All these things are still true, no matter what this person says about belief systems. Communities are still true. We're still here. We still exist. And what are we to do with that? But this isn't much different than what the Transcendentalist movement confronted. To really understand Emerson, Thoreau, and Fuller, we need to understand what they were rebelling against. I mean, they just didn't emerge out of nothing and come out with new thoughts. They actually were standing over and against something. And what they were standing over and against was a culture that believed that reason from the outside was truth, and that you are to internalize this reason from the outside and then make it your truth. It had nothing to do with who you are. And if you had inquiries or something, you would move toward religious doctrines to understand who you are as a human being and to answer your questions of meaning. You would turn to religious doctrine. That reason was, in a sense, God. And that, in particular, in their world, white males were the kings of reason, which justified imperialism and justified taking natural resources from other countries, which we've been doing for years and years. So they have a different perspective. There was a school of thought that came out of Germany called Higher Criticism, and it was a way of analyzing literature. And what it said was that we can analyze literature, we can look at vocabulary, we can look at different words, we can look at the style of writing, and figure out where they came from and what communities they belong to. Well, these Unitarians in New England said, well, why don't we take that literary tool and apply it to the Holy Scripture, to the Bible? Well, that was not a welcomed endeavor to many religious people, because you can't analyze what's holy. It's just holy, and you have to accept it and bring it into yourself and be obedient to it. But these people said, no, we need to apply this higher criticism to the Scripture. And indeed, what they discovered was the many different viewpoints. They discovered that in the Torah and the Old Testament, you had, for the names of God, Elohim, Yahweh, El, and different gods. And then when they took that further, they traced those different names for gods to different communities and different origins. So they said, no, your sacred scripture isn't talking about Yahweh, one God. Your sacred scripture is talking about four different perspectives of a God. These communities got together and got along with one another and incorporated. So there's no monotheism here. Well, that had some effect in that community that was based on monotheism, Calvin accepting original sin. So the Transcendentalists said no to that belief oppression. They said no to that. They also said that as this was breaking up religiously, they also began to read literature, Buddhist literature, Sufi literature, literature from the Eastern world, and they also began to believe that your intuition, that the divine light within you could come out and speak and have a voice in what would be considered truth. That was a horror to the religious organizations of that time, because you were a sinner, born into sin. You had nothing good to offer, and that's just the way it is. And many people had that belief. But here comes these Transcendentalists saying, no, what's inside you is good. What's inside of you is good and needs to be considered. So here you have these Harvard-educated elites battling the common people and leading us, as their worldview was beginning to break up, with new thoughts and new ideas. Emerson says this. They were also trying to do something else. Is that they were also saying that in this country, we now have our own bodies of literature and our own authors, and we will stand on our own 2 feet. Again, challenging the religious belief system that went from Europe to the United States. So Emerson says this, We will walk on our own feet. We will work with our own hands. We will speak with our own minds. A nation of persons will for the first time exist because each believes him or herself is inspired by the divine soul, which also inspires all men. So here's Emerson saying, radical individualism, saying that what comes from within me has a place. Margaret Fuller, she not only worked from that religious perspective, but she also worked for reform, prison reform, social reform, women to have equal rights. Susan B. Anthony said Margaret Fuller was her inspiration. So you see this newness coming out as this worldview is breaking up. And these transcendentalists are staying on the front edge of that newness, leading people in these new beliefs. There's a danger in following new beliefs. There's a danger in accepting new truths and then speaking new truths. Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King both credit Henry David Thoreau for their ideas about nonviolence and how to address tyranny. The danger is, it did not end well for them. They were both killed for following Henry David Thoreau and the transcendentalist ideals as spiritual guides. So here we are today, Unitarian Universalists, looking at this new truth coming from neuroscience about who we are to be as human beings with one another, knowing that if you went out into this community and talked to religious people and talked to anybody about belief systems being evolutionary tools to cope, those would not be welcome words. We know that. I'm not even sure if they're welcome words here. Maybe I should ask the board members first. See how it would go. We don't know. And then we have to ask, what is that? Now, I was driving by a church yesterday, and there was a sign on the church. You know how you love it, some church sign? And it said, kindness is the best weapon to defeat your enemies. Now, for my value system, kindness, weapons, and defeat do not go in the same sentence. You don't use kindness as a tool. You either are kind or you are not kind. So that's the context in which we live. We live in a context in which people will use words to accomplish any task and even disguise the task they want to accomplish by using words. We live in a crazy world. In today's paper, there was a headline that said, how much weed killer in your drinking water is safe?
That's a good question.
But what is that? Or there were reports in the paper today at a town hall meeting where people who are recipients of Medicare saying we don't want government to interfere with our medical care. How are we to engage in dialogue when we can't even have thought? One of the characteristics of the collapsing of the Roman Empire was that we left higher thinking and dialogue and philosophy behind, and images became the way of communicating and power, and dialogue left us. Conversation left us, and images became the power of the culture. And I'm thinking, our empire hadn't quite collapsed yet. But is that where we are today? Where signs and images and sound bites control the minds of people, control the minds of who we are as a people. Here we are looking at this discovery about what it means to be human in this world that if we were to speak that, we know we would not be welcome. So I'm thinking, we're always going to be a small group. That's all there is to it. We are always going to be a small group. And then I'm also thinking, do we have a responsibility to speak these truths? If we allow Emerson, Thoreau, and Fuller to be our spiritual guides, if we take the principles of the Transcendentalist movement and we say yes to that part of our history, and we own that, we like to own that part of our history because we like Emerson, Thoreau, and Fuller, and we like their writings, and we like their words, and they're good, and we like them. But are we willing to own them? Are we willing to bring their values and their ideals into ourselves and make them part of us? And have that motivate us to speak to truth as we see it today in our culture? Are we willing to be guided? Are we willing to seek teachers from our tradition? I don't know. If we are, are you willing? And one thing is, I'm amazed when I read the Transcendentalist values and their idealism, is their willingness to be perpetually in the process of transformation and change. If you are in the process of transformation and change, I think you hear these truths, like Thomas Mitzinger's truth about neuroscience, and you are not as threatened by it. Because change just continues, and this is part of learning, and this is just part of movement, and we're not threatened. But if we have a belief system that I have to have in order to ward off my anxiety, that I have to have to feel secure, or if I have a belief system that I have to belong to a community, and that belief system, in a way, is my ticket in, if I have these beliefs, I'm accepted, then I'm going to see this new truth as a threat. And I will fight against it. And I will make fun of people and shame people that have it. And when I look at history, new truth or science doesn't always win. Depends who's in power. So the question for us today is, do we dare allow our heritage and the people in our heritage become our spiritual gods? Do we dare say yes to them as spiritual gods? And do we have a responsibility with this truth to engage it and discover what it means for us and then to speak it to the community? Those are our questions for today.
Questions, comments?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the neuroscience point that you were talking about?
His discovery through clinical trials in the book called The Ego Tunnel was that our consciousness evolved as evolution continued on, and our consciousness was an evolutionary adaptation to the environment to give us advantage for survival. What that means is that our consciousness is a creation to help us survive. And it is open to meaning whatever we give to it. There's no absolute truth to what we create in our consciousness. However, in my training, in my work, I always like to go from experience to theory back to experience to theory back to experience to theory. Okay, so let's just say that's a theory. Okay. We still have to come back and say, well, we're all sitting in this room, and what we believe will guide our behavior and how we interact with one another, these things have meaning somehow. But how can we recognize at the same time that these are not absolute truths, that these are flexible, and that these will evolve over time given the different historical context, and that's okay. Why this is so difficult is we bring it into the personal level. How many of us have self-beliefs that we have been wrestling with for 10, 20, 15, 30 years that we can't change? Then we have to ask ourselves the question, how are these self-beliefs, which I wish would change, how come I'm holding them and still giving them power if they're a creation to try to help me survive? What am I still doing holding on to them if I created them when I was 10 and now I'm 50 and I'm still holding on to that belief and it's no longer serving me, but I still got it? What's going on? It brings us to ask those kind of questions, and they're difficult questions. If I'm in a community that has a particular set of beliefs and I start questioning those beliefs, then I risk being banned by that community. And when we look through human history, you change your belief system, sometimes you get banned. So those things are at stake. I mean, if you say patriotism is a belief we put in our consciousness, and you question that as really kind of a meaningless thing in this country right now, you don't get elected office if you're not wearing that flag pin. So it has a lot of implications for us and how we hold ourselves community. And that's one of the questions he asks. Given this, and according to him, given this truth about who we are as humans and how our brains work, are we going to be able to let go of myth? Are we going to be able to let go of story and still be able to hold ourselves together as a society? Or do we need that? So these are hard questions.